Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producers are Jamie Lasante and Lou Pellegrino. This is the Sports Illustrated Media Roundtable, another edition of that. I have, as always, John Orand, the media writer of Sports Business Daily and Journal, and Jimmy Trina, who works for SportsIllustrated.com in various capacities. And let's head to Jimmy and John right now. John, you are on the road right now. Jimmy, you are in studio with me. Welcome back to the Sports Illustrated Media Roundtable.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
Boy, that was really just
great to be here as always.
Talk about a delay. I mean, get some energy up. I mean, if we had a Jerry Madelon type here, he'd be coaching you guys to get the energy up. All right, John, since you seem to have more energy than Jimmy, I want to start with you.
Great. I'm excited for this, Richard.
Yeah, the NBA Finals, John, are going to conclude after we have taped this. But what we do know at this point is that they are trending to be the highest viewed series since Michael Jordan's last final series in 1998. As we tape this now, the series is averaging 19.4 million viewers, as I said, most viewed NBA Finals since 1998. John, there are a lot of people who thought that, one, super teams and this matchup once again of the Cavs-Warriors, one, were not good for the NBA, and two, there probably were a lot of people who thought, you know what, the numbers are going to be down a little bit because we're tired of this. What has been proven is the opposite, even though the Warriors jumped out to a big lead. So let's start here, John. Why do you think this is? Why has this rating been so really, really strong for the NBA?
Well, I think in every sport, when you have a dynasty, everybody complains about dynasties, but people watch them. I mean, the Warriors, they're the villains now. Was it Steve Kerr just wearing super villains on a shirt earlier this week? And if you talk to Turner, if you talk to ESPN, they're desperate to get the Warriors on their schedule. People know Steph Curry. People know Kevin Durant. And when I say people, I just mean it goes outside hardcore NBA fans. I mean, my mother knows exactly who LeBron James is and probably could identify what his number is. I mean, that's highly unusual. So this is the type of series that is going to draw in the casual fan much more than, say, if you had, like, Toronto playing Houston, you know, in the finals.
Jimmy, if I remember correctly, you tweeted something to the effect of, this is a disaster for ESPN. And it has turned out not to be a disaster. Right. So what was your thought heading into that? Because you were one of those people who thought this might not be viewed.
I think I tweeted that after game one when the initial report was that the rating was down, game one from game one. And it looked like Golden State was going to sweep, which would have concluded also on a Friday night. So that's why I thought the rating would be down. I think the big reason, the interest in LeBron James from the non-basketball fan.
More than Durant can win his first title?
I don't think the fringe NBA fan is into Golden State. I think they're into LeBron. LeBron's a celebrity. He's not just an athlete. Kevin Durant's not a celebrity. So I think that's the big factor. And I think the style of play in these games, I mean, if you are a fringe fan, they're flying up and down the court doing ridiculous things with, you know, either launching three-pointers from, you know, basically half court, or LeBron is, you know, bringing the ball up by himself and going to the hoop and showing off what he could do. So, and then, you know, they got lucky with the game three was very close. And then obviously game four was, I mean, you never saw a game like that before in your life. So it came together nicely for ESPN.
That's it. You know, I'm not.
I disagree. If I can jump in here.
So Richard, do I, but go ahead, John.
I mean, the Warriors have star power. Steph Curry is a former MVP.
Two-time.
Who's been in this position.
Yeah, I know that. I'm well aware that he's a two-time MVP. He's not LeBron James. I mean,
no, but he's somebody who I think casual fans know, and they know everything about him. I mean, he shows up at post-game press conferences with his kid.
Yeah.
You know, he's this. You know, I think that you're underestimating the Warriors being in the finals for three straight years, setting a record for...
Well, so the Cavs in the finals for three straight years. I mean...
Well, all right, so let me... In an interesting way, you're both right. There's no doubt that LeBron James is the biggest draw of the series, but Jimmy, to John's point, I do think the Warriors have reached a certain level of popular culture fandom just because they play exciting basketball and they do have a couple of guys who are probably the... you know, arguably the second and third most popular players
in
the league.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm saying the person who doesn't even care about basketball knows who LeBron James is. That's
well, the question is that person know Steph Curry? And John's saying yes, and they might.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, anyway, John, if these teams play again next year, which I don't see how you could make the argument that they would not be the favorites to meet again. Obviously, we know San Antonio is going to be good, and you know, maybe some players will move, et cetera, et cetera. But Cleveland, Golden State, certainly going to be favored to win the championship again. And Cleveland, I think, as long as LeBron is healthy and you know under 40 years old, will always be a threat. John, I would say honestly, I think the interest would be there once again at the end of the year. I think they'd put up similar numbers. I do not buy some kind of argument that fans and viewers would be fatigued, even though I bet you would read about that. What do you say if they end up meeting again?
Yeah, I think you might see fatigue in the early round of the playoffs. But ESPN this week is coming out with its Lakers Celtics documentary, 30 for 30. I mean, those are two teams that met seemingly every year through the 80s in the championship game. You know, or that was the expectation. I think that if they were to meet, it's a big if. It's a full year away. But if the Cavs and Warriors meet again next year, I see ratings going nuts. I mean, and continuing on down for the final series.
Jimmy, you want to add anything to this before we move on?
I think the ratings would be strong again for a fourth year. I think one of the things I think when I thought ratings might be down a little bit for the finals too was the playoffs were a disaster. The NBA playoffs were a disaster until the finals.
I agree.
And people were not happy with the playoffs and the delay, so I thought that was going to be.
If Kawhi Leonard doesn't get hurt, that could have changed because maybe that Spurs series goes seven.
Can I say one more thing about my LeBron Curry point? Just to go back to that. Here's the other thing too about why I think LeBron is even on. No one's comparing Steph Curry to Michael Jordan.
Correct.
That debate, LeBron Jordan, has been going on for how long now, and it doesn't stop. Right. And when FS1 wants to get attention, who do they go after? They go after LeBron.
LeBron
they go after Stephen Curry.
LeBron is the internet metrics man when you want to sort of get attention. So that's true, John. One more ratings thing, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. But it is worth noting. With Jimmy's prediction about the NBA being dead wrong, I was dead wrong about the Stanley Cup. Not that I thought it would be a disaster, but I did not see these ratings at all for the Predators and Penguins. They were really, really impressive when you might have thought that this would not do as well, just given that Nashville's television market size is not so great. And Pittsburgh had won last year, and again, they're not a top 10 television market in terms of population, but I think NBC has to be psyched, John, in that I looked for the last game. I think it was up like 28-30% from last year's game six, and so the Stanley Cup Finals are going to – this last game is going to track to like 7 million viewers or so. Again, it's not the NFL, it's not college football, it's not the NBA, but that's not a bad rating at all for the NHL.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was surprised to see those ratings up as high as they were. But, you know, when I looked at it, it's similar to the NBA where the Penguins have been around. How long have the Penguins been around? I think that they have a known team that, you know, is certainly not hitting the casual fan like the NBA, I don't think. People know who Sidney Crosby is and seemingly hated everywhere outside of Pittsburgh. But you know, that's the type of person that casual fans tune in to want to watch.
John, one of the things that both of us get sort of covering this stuff day to day is that we always hear from viewers, why does NBC put games 2 and 3 on NBCSN? And I wish Twitter had more characters so you could sort of explain that you're trying to make, if you're NBC, that cable network, in demand for the cable carriers. You have to make NBC Sports Network valuable so they can charge whatever they charge per subscriber for the network. How do you look at that, John? I mean, in the end, is that a smart decision to put those games on those two, to put two games on their cable network because you're trying to increase the brand of that? Or are you really giving up what would be a much bigger rating story if you put those two games on NBC Network?
Yeah, that's the big question that leagues have been asking for, you know, as long as I've been covering this. You want to go for the money, which would mean you go on NBC Sports Network, or do you want to go for the audience, which would mean that, that you stick with the broadcast network? I mean, in terms of a pure business decision, what NBC is doing is, I mean, could you imagine some cable operator or satellite company in Pittsburgh or Nashville not carrying NBC Sports Network this month? I mean, there would be riots. People would drop that system so quickly just because they would want to get those games. So it's a way for NBC to make sure that NBC Sports Network gets a lot of carriage, is in as many homes as it can be, and it keeps its license fee up as high as it can get because this is the primo programming that it has. And then in turn, NBC is able to use that money to help give a bigger rights fee to the NHL to keep the NHL on NBC.
Jimmy, you're shaking your head. Or you were in the studio.
No, I'm shaking my head from before when you said you wish Twitter had more than 140 characters. It's not like you have your own column on a major sports website where you could write these things out and get those thoughts out there.
All right, well, I do that as well. All right, listen, Jimmy, I know you're not a hockey guy, so we'll move on.
Yeah.
John, your publication, Sports Business Journal, had a really interesting piece, I think it was this week, about the average age of television viewers in 2016 in relation to that average age of television viewers in 2006, and I'm specifically talking about sports properties. And there were some, John, amazing findings in there. One in terms of that, the WWE, I wish I have this in front of me. I don't. You probably do the numbers. But the numbers of the WWE in terms of the average age of the fan today is significantly higher. It might be like 16 years or something to that effect, higher today. So many of these sports, in fact, I think if I remember right, every single one of them went up in age except the WTA, which had a pretty old demographic to start with and only came down into, you know, whatever it was, the 50s or so. I'm going to actually see, Jimmy, if I can pull this up here.
But I have it for you, Richard.
You do. Okay, so
I'll do the research for your podcast.
Go ahead, Jimmy. Do you have it in front of you? I have the...
In 2000, the median age of pro wrestling was 28. Now it's 54.
Wow. That is incredible. So, John, what was really interesting was that your guys did this story, and it may, you know, this doesn't always happen, but it
you're asking a long question again, by the way.
Don't worry, Jim.
Wrap it up.
It crossed over, John, from the industry into sort of the popular sporting culture. What, when you read this story, what were sort of the biggest takeaways for you? Because for me, it was wrestling and the fact that the NBA basically didn't really move up much. It went from 40 to 42 in terms of the median age, which means the NBA is in a great position in terms of maintaining its sort of youthful base.
Yeah, my takeaway from that story is that the TV viewers are aging faster than the general U.S. population. So, you know, in 10 years, you know, a lot of sports, like you mentioned wrestling, is aging more than 10 years. And so my big takeaway on that is that, you know, how long have we been writing about, you know, the Facebooks and the Twitters and these sort of digital companies that are out there looking for sports rights? And I think what we're seeing, because this isn't the average age of the fan, this is the average age of the TV viewer. And I think that a lot of younger viewers are finding their sports content outside of TV. And this is something that, you know, not only all the leagues should have an eye on, but the networks should be really worried about some of the findings there, because every single sport is up, and many of them are up beyond the, you know, 18 to 49 demo that the ad sales are paying for. So if your average age is over 57, why on earth would anybody want to advertise for that sport? So it's I thought it was some really interesting numbers that came out with David Broughton is our research guy that came out with a lot of those with Magna Global. It was really a fascinating look.
All right, I finally found it. My bad. I was bullshitting my way through as I was trying to search, and I didn't do a good job on that. But the PGA Tour average age, 64. That's up 5 years since 2006. I'll just give you a couple of these.
I'm shocked it's that low.
NASCAR, average age 50, median age or average age 58, up 9 years since 2006. Major League Baseball average age 57, up 4 years since 2006. This is a big one.
Richard, how about, because go to some of these younger sports. I mean, UFC Their average age was 49.
Stunning. Stunning.
Action sports. Their average age is 47. I mean, some of these numbers are like you can hardly believe
them. I'll tell you one thing. Seeing the NHL at 49 stunned me. I would have thought for sure that would have been younger, and they were up 7 years. The NFL's at 50. That didn't surprise me, and they didn't go up much. And as again, Jimmy, I mentioned that we'll get to you in a second. The NBA at 42 is pretty young. Only went up 2 years in 10 years, and then, which is obviously what they probably pushed to market, MLS, average age 40, only up one since 2006. So soccer, once again, will try to make the argument, we are the sport of the future. Look at our average age. It's 40. Jimmy.
I mean, it's a ridiculous argument. If the NBA average age is 42 and they're 40, I mean,
I'm just telling you what soccer. That's what I love soccer, but that's what they're going to make. That's the pitch they're going to make.
I just, you know, we've talked about it. I feel like a million times with people cutting the cord and finding different ways to watch everything, not just sports. And this is just a reflection of that. I think. I mean, I do think there are some, like with the WWE thing. I think they're hurt now by it. It's funny. Their average age was, 54, 58, whatever I said it was. But, like, their whole thing is they did this whole shift to be kid-friendly, and the Attitude era is gone. If they still had – I mean, they're PG now. If they still were Attitude era-ish, I think that number would be lower.
Well, that's interesting because a lot of people will say about the WWE is what's happened is their fan base is just – you know, it's 40-year-old guys who watched it in their 20s or have come back to it. John – I want to move. It's a terrible segment by me, but I just don't want to forget to talk about this. And Jimmy, I'm going to start with you. Rex Ryan, I don't remember when it was exactly, like a week ago. Maybe it's a couple of days before.
It was last weekend.
Last weekend. He's in Nashville hanging out with his brother Rob and gets into some kind of scuffle with some people at a restaurant. It's not clear what started it, who's responsible, who's not, et cetera, et cetera. There's video of it, but it's, again, not clear as to were they breaking up a fight, were they taking a swing. But here's what I want to get to Jimmy, and then we'll get to John, you know, being that he is very tight with ESPN management, his take. But you as the average guy watching television, do you think this has any impact on, one, how you perceive Rex, and two, if you're ESPN management, does this impact you at all?
I mean, I think the second part is the interesting question. I don't think anyone's opinion of Rex Ryan changed based on what happened at that bar. I mean, I've always thought he was a buffoon. Other guys think he's funny. So you sort of, it falls along those lines and everyone relates to it. You know, I don't think anyone was surprised by this. I mean, the guy's a buffoon. There's really nothing else to the story other than that. It's ESPN hired him knowing what he is. I think it would be so disingenuous now if they did, you know, some sort of punishment or suspension or anything like that, because that's what he was when they hired him. Why would they be surprised by what he did?
John, understanding that we're not going to know exactly what happened until there are more findings. Where do you think networks sort of stand when their talent gets involved with something away from the set, whether it's fracas like Ryan and was involved in, whether it's DUI, whether it's being in the news, let's say, for having an affair. Again, these are not specifically things that are about your performance on air, but part of this other, I don't want to say like character clause or something, but you know what I mean, John? It's like it's part of who you are. It's bad publicity, but it's not, you're not doing it on the air. So from your reporting over the years on ESPN, how do you think they evaluate something like what happened to Rex?
I think that It depends, which is the worst way to answer that type of question. Like, what is ESPN concerned about? I mean, so when they were, how many years ago was it that, you know, Deadspin was going through that whole, like, you know, outing people for, you know, for various affairs?
Right. It feels like 10 years ago. I'm not sure exactly.
It was probably 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And so if somebody ran afoul during that era, they were going to be dealt with differently than they would if they ran afoul of it, say, right now. I think right now we see it with the political arena. If somebody ran afoul saying something politically outrageous today, I think they would be dealt with differently than if they had said that maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So I think it I think the one thing that happens, like with Rex Ryan, you can bet that, you know, Chris LaPlaca's team, you know, Mike Soltis, Josh Gerlowitz, they're combing social media and they're trying to figure out whether there's going to be some sort of, you know, bite to that. I mean, you take a look at Fox News with O'Reilly. You know, he would still be there if there wasn't going to be an advertiser boycott. That all of a sudden Fox saw that they were going to be, you know, it was more trouble than it was worth, and they were going to end up losing some money out of the whole deal. So I don't think that there's not a real cookie cutter approach to say, like, if you cross this line, it's more like if you cross this line at this time and we're going to get hurt financially, then there's going to be a problem.
It's interesting you say that, John. Jimmy, I know this is something you wanted to talk about. And that PR departments in television in particular, John, I think both of us would agree, are more reactive than proactive when it comes to this. I'm not trying to be pejorative here, but that's just the reality. They take the temperature of the sentiment of how the public is feeling, and then we'll often react. Kurt Schilling says something. If nobody says anything on social media, nothing happens. If there's a wave of people who say, I'm not going to watch your network anymore, well, then management starts to do something. Now, Jimmy, this is going to be decided long after we put this out, and people will be listening to this and they'll already know the result. But as we tape this today, Megyn Kelly and NBC are in the middle of a major PR issue, in that there are people all over the social media now, all over the web right now, particularly those who are connected to Sandy Hook and mothers and parents of those children, who are beyond furious that Megyn Kelly has taped and will air an interview with Alex Jones. Is he of InfoWars, correct?
InfoWars, right.
Yeah, I mean, a conspiracy theorist to the point of no return, and generally speaking, just a horrible dude. Not saying he's not newsworthy, but that he is a horrible dude in terms of being a Sandy Hook hoax or truther. And so, Jimmy, it gets into the idea now that NBC PR is sort of in, again, not the same situation ESPN is always in with these things, but they're in a situation where, what do you do? And I know you had some sort of feelings on this. Do you think we're taping this
Monday?
Yeah, Monday, 6 days away from when this would air. Do you think this still airs Sunday?
I have a feeling, based on what I've seen in the last hour, it's not going to. Because now I've seen parents of Sandy Hook victims come out and really make a plea with NBC. And if they ignore that, then
they could start to go after advertisers.
There's
going to
be a big
done.
Problem. Yeah. And I think Megyn Kelly, as I've told you, is a huge lightweight and a huge phony. So I'm not surprised she's doing this. I am surprised about NBC pushing this. I mean, for Megyn Kelly to say her job is to shine a light, I mean, could you make me want to vomit anymore? Like, you don't need to shine a light on someone who is saying that kids getting shot didn't happen and they were actors. That's not the light that needs to be shined or shown or whatever the word is. I'm sorry, I'm not intelligent enough to figure it out.
Well, listen, you can make the argument Alex Jones is a newsworthy subject, and BuzzFeed has profiled him, and others have profiled News on the View, et cetera. And that's fine. And NBC News has the right to give their airwaves to this guy, although I think at this point there's not much left to know. We know he's got a relationship with Trump, and we know that he's in the White House. But there are ramifications, and that is the deal. There are ramifications if you do this sort of interview, and I don't think they had any clue as to what is coming down the pike, because Sandy Hook is understandably in this country one of those lightning rod issues, because there are millions and millions of people who are parents in this country, and the most unimaginable worst thing on earth is to think of your child in that school. I mean, as someone who has young kids, it's unfathomable to think about. So, John, I've been watching this all day, and it's obviously a very interesting story in terms of sort of media and PR. And I think I tend to side with Jimmy in that I think, you know what? Maybe NBC doesn't sort of give in to the pressure because they want to feel. I will say
but
this,
don't
John.
You think I think it depends where the pressure is coming
yes,
from.
Yes, I do.
Here's the other thing about this. We're so focused on Sandy Hook. That's what we've been talking about. But he was part of the disaster with promoting the whole thing that Hillary Clinton was running a child prostitution ring in a pizzeria. Right, yeah. And someone got killed for that. He's not just a piece of shit. He's dangerous. There's a big difference between the... He's dangerous. So someone already died because of this situation. And for NBC, they better think twice because that Pizzagate story is going to become a big player this week as well.
John, I mean to sort of filibuster here. John, my contention is this. No matter what happens, I think this is a line in the sand for Megyn Kelly's show, and I believe the beginning and the end. I think she made a catastrophically poor choice in one of her earliest shows in an attempt to obviously get some buzz by putting this dude on the air. You've now heard Jimmy and I go for 5 minutes. What are your thoughts on this?
I expect that NBC – I don't think that – a news program is going to buckle to pressure. I expect that NBC is going to run it. I think that, this is a person who has the ear of the president of the United States. I think that he's a newsworthy person. We saw a 2-minute clip of the interview. We don't know how it's going to play. We don't know anything about it. We don't know if he's going to actually interview some of the Sandy Hook moms. We don't know anything about it, but I think that NBC News is in a tough spot here because I think if NBC News buckles to pressure over one of their news programs, I think that says something a whole lot larger than if they decide to go ahead with an interview with a newsworthy person.
All right, well,
as reprehensible as that person is.
Yeah, it's a tough spot of their own doing. They made the call, so no sympathies for them. But John, Jimmy, as I think about it, I tend to agree with, I don't know how I feel because, it's so early in the process. Generally speaking, I agree with John that news programs don't buckle down, but my sense is that the pressure is going to be enormous over the next 5 days.
I'm just surprised by how you guys are so just, it's a news program and, she got paid an enormous amount of money.
Right.
They need to now get some bang for their buck.
Right.
So they're doing this for ratings.
Definitely.
And for ratings, they're putting on a guy who said Hillary Clinton was running a prostitution ring in a pizza place and said Sandy Hook was done by actors. What is being a news pro? I mean, they're putting on – this is what they're doing justify Megyn Kelly's contract.
Yeah, I think their producers made a horrible decision, but we are trying to analyze the larger point of if you cave in, I guess, is what John is saying. If you cave into pressure on this – where is the line drawn? That being said, I think they made a terrible choice in terms of putting this guy on. John, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are you arguing the larger principle that once you allow people to dictate your editorial content, everything is sort of blown up that way?
Yeah, and I also think, fake news is a big topic right now. And he's Comet Pizza is in my neighborhood in D.C.
Wow.
I think this guy is completely reprehensible. But, if we're going to talk about fake news, do we want to do it from the ivory tower? Do we want to get in and see what this guy has to say? I don't necessarily want to see what he has to say, but I think if NBC buckles on this, as a reporter, I would hate to see that. I hate to give this guy press, but I think he's newsworthy. I do.
Well, this is going to be the other headache for NBC because if the interview does air, and she does, and I'll quote the great Bob Raisman, Twinkie Munch, that could be the beginning of the end for that whole show. If she goes soft on him,
it's a no-win situation.
Right.
I agree.
Right.
We agree there completely.
This is not the perfect segue, but John, you wrote a piece you went to the NFL Network. I believe you were there on site. And one of the things, this was for their sort of annual talent and production meetings where they bring everybody in to talk about what their upcoming year is going to look like. And one of the things, John, that struck me was that they really, at least in talking to you, made it a point to tell you that they are telling their commentators on social media to avoid politics basically at all costs and not to get into any kind of back and forth with those who either have political discourse or to those who are maybe attempting to troll said commentators. John, give us a little more insight to that. And then I guess the larger thing is, can an organization really dictate what you say on your social media feeds? I mean, obviously they have the hammer. If you say something that they don't like, they can in theory fire you. But man, that... That strikes me as a pretty scary line. What you're allowing your or what you're dictating your people to say on what is, in my opinion, their personal social media feed.
Yeah, I didn't view that as hard and fast rules. I think it's more guidelines, and I think that the suits at the NFL Network are taking a look at ESPN, and much of the heat of ESPN comes around political views, and most of the political views are espoused on Twitter, I think. And okay. So I think they said, and this is the way I try to do my Twitter feed. I think most people follow me to hear about DC sports and hear about sports media. And so I try, you know, I don't try to use that as a platform to talk about sort of my political views, which is separate from you and Jimmy, which is a fine decision to make. Everybody makes their own decision. I think that they would prefer, like, you work for the NFL. Your whole brand is associated for the NFL. If you're going to go out on social media, you know, just respect why people are following you, and they're following you for football. Again, if Deion Sanders starts to tweet about Trump, I don't think he's going to get fired by any means. But I think that it's just something that they just wanted to put out there.
Yeah, first of all, I'd rather have John Oren stop tweeting about Maryland and start tweeting about politics, quite frankly, because it's enough with the terps. Jimmy.
Don't you think it's done almost as much, if not more, I think more, as a preventative from someone crossing the line? Like, I don't, you know, someone just talking about politics is harmless, but it's, you don't want someone to go Bart Hubbock, basically. And I think that's what they want to prevent is, because I think if you are, I mean, Richard knows this, if you are going to put it out there and talk politics, no matter what you say, you're going to get blowback. And some of it could be nasty, some of it could be hurtful, some of it could be whatever it is. So then the conversation gets heated, it gets crazy, and then you pull a Bart Hubbock and you say something outrageous, and then your employer has to deal with that. I think they institute these rules as a preventative to not have to deal with that, instead of just, you know, people just getting pissed off over regular political content.
And John, you know what's interesting? You brought up something, and again, we could do 3 hours on this, and we're not going to, because we have done ESPN and politics, etc. But one of the things, John, that always gets missed, in my opinion, when people start talking about ESPN heading left, and it's the left-leaning network, and it's the adjunct of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, is that so much of that perception, and John and Jimmy, we've gone down this road, so much of that perception is BS. But whatever that perception is, John, it really comes from Twitter. It's not Jemele Hill, Michael Smith, and Pablo Torre are debating the French election on Around the Horn. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people's personal Twitter feeds and how they feel about politics or social issues on their feeds. And then some viewers then perceive that is what all these shows talk about, but that's not the case. So that's, John, that's always sort of, I feel like, something missed. It's that, it's 90% of that perception comes from, I think, what people think they see on Twitter. Jimmy, you're shaking your head.
I was shaking your head because I was shaking my head because you were going to John first as usual.
Oh, go ahead. Gets annoying. I'm sorry. That's fair.
I do think I'm amazed at how many people believe it. And there are other media outlets that sort of promote this ESPN has gone liberal thing, and I think that's where it's built up. One of the things that always surprises me is because whenever someone starts with the ESPN is, you know, gone liberal, I'm just like, you know, get a clue. So many people bring up, and it's fascinating to me, so many people bring up Caitlyn Jenner and the ESPYs. Like, they're still pissed about that.
Right.
Now, I know ESPN people listen to this, so close your ears if you are. There could not possibly be anything more useless than the ESPYs, okay? It's a made-up, nonsense thing, and they gave Caitlyn Jenner an award, and people are legitimately pissed off about it. I don't know what's more deranged, like the people who care about the ESPYs or the people who think because of the ESPYs they went liberal because they gave Caitlyn Jenner. But this always comes up to this. How many years ago was that now? Three or something?
Two,
three. And it's still, if you go on, say ESPN's not liberal, they're going to bring up, oh, they gave Caitlyn Jenner an ESPY. Who cares? I mean, if that's what you're worried about, you've got.
The great thing about that is Caitlyn Jenner is a serious Republican, too.
Yes.
But And Jamie's laughing here because, you know, ESPNers can then start blasting us, I guess, for our Sportsman of the Year and swimsuit parties.
Well, those are, I mean,
listen, the ESPYs are horrible. There's no argument around that. It's only saving grace is that they do have a couple of these awards, Arthur Ashe Award and some other stuff, which some really
to justify the
cool stuff happens. Right, but it's generally speaking,
that's why they can always say the ESPYs.
Jamie,
are we
going to get an explicit tag for this? It's one big star fucking festival. Let's not pretend otherwise.
Right, of course.
And I'm not saying SI doesn't have that as well sometimes, but like. That's it with the saving grace of the, you know, you'll get like a moment where who is the guy who had that like incredible daughter? He was like a Chiefs football player.
The Bengals, Devin Still?
Devin Still. Like yeah. You sort of like praise a young girl for fighting cancer. So that's the only saving grace of that show. And it's well done, like at least those moments. But, John, getting back to this, I'd be the first to say that there are a ton of left-leaning ESPN commentators. You can't pretend otherwise, and I think they have their interests, and there's no doubt probably more on-air people support, let's say, Kaepernick than not. But, John, getting back again, that's always the frustrating thing is it's like if you watch ESPN and Jimmy Jimmy, you had to watch FS1. If you watch ESPN 24 hours a day, okay, and you just sort of – you sat there, the number of stuff that would fall under politics in a given day, what do you think it is, John? 3%, 2%, I mean, maybe even less, right? It's just there's not political debate going on. Where that politics is happening, at least in my opinion, is on the social media feeds.
Yeah, and I think that's what the NFL is trying to counteract.
Right.
Because, I think it's impossible to watch the 6 p.m. Sports Center and Jemele Hill and just ignore or very public Twitter feed. So, you know, is it 2% or is it like that whole show? Because then she's kind of talking to me with that sort of background, right? And so I think that's where it comes in. And I think that the other problem is that Jemele Hill is a big personality, you know, and Bomani is a big personality. The conservatives that ESPN has out on social media are not big personalities like that.
They're not something else.
They might not be as well known, but they're, you know, they do exist. They do have.
But they get drowned out, don't you think?
There are far more progressives, who have a bigger social media imprint, at ESPN than conservatives. Although, John, interestingly enough, you and I both know a ton of people who work there who are executives who are absolutely members of the GOP and are it would be the first to say, you know, what Colin Kaepernick is doing is horrible and we're happy he's not signed. So it's not – I think a lot of times people think that places like a Sanders campaign rally, and that's not necessarily true. John, have I stumped you there, John? You want me to go to Jimmy?
Yeah, go to Jimmy on that one.
Jimmy.
No, look, I just think that there's a general sense, you know. I mean, look at there was a player and it was a game four. There was a guy courtside who got kicked out of the game, and for yelling at the Warriors. It just struck me that everybody, Mike Breen, Mark Jackson. Everybody was, took the side of the players. It's a very player first. Not that there is much that you can defend for the guy yelling, presumably expletives. I don't know what he was yelling, but there's just the sense that's how most people feel. You know, they take the side of the players. Most people feel like they take the side of the. More progressive, more liberal sort of viewpoint.
All right, this is my fault. This podcast has run off the rails a little bit. That's because I'm not doing a good job of hosting. So that last 3-minute segment was not great. It's not your fault, John. It's not Jimmy's fault. It's mine. What else do we need to talk about here? Did either of you guys happen to watch at all, Jimmy? I know this is going to be a no for you. The Fox broadcast on Saturday where they used drivers only for the Xfinity series. John, did you check that out at all?
I don't even know what the Xfinity series is.
It's the lower level. It's NASCAR has a top level, and that's sort of the number two level.
It's a hand wave.
It was great. It was actually great. I thought it was fascinating to see current drivers serving as broadcasters. And, you know, again, I don't know if you could have pulled this. You could pull this off in another sport where, you know, you have eight, let's say, NFL players in a booth. But it was pretty interesting, John, just in that they pulled it off. Like, they had eight current NASCAR drivers, and it was an interesting broadcast. You did not see it, is what you're telling me.
I did not see it, but it sounds a lot like a Turner doing the players only Monday night.
Although this was in game form. John, by the way, on a total aside, who is running the Fox Sports PR department right now? Do we know? What is going on there?
I think it's somebody called Jamie Horowitz.
Well, we know that. But I want to know this, John. Let's go behind the scenes. Is Fox actively emailing you to propose story ideas and or features or trends, or like are they actively calling you on a weekly basis to say, John, we think this would be something interesting for you?
Here is this is very inside baseball. I mean, Fox is still understaffed, and I know that they're trying to hire an SVP out in LA. I know that they're trying to hire some VPs underneath that SVP out in LA. And so they have at least maybe two or three sort of, big shoes to fill. Because when they lost, you know, they lost D'Amelio, they lost Bell, they lost Bellitti. You know, they lost, years, decades of experience, and they probably, five, six people on him, and they have not replaced them. So they brought in Terry Hines, who's overseeing all of this, and she's trying to hire, but it's been a hard slog for their PR staff so far.
All right, well, John, it's a very diplomatic answer, and maybe you'll be getting the scoop on. First of all,
does Fox not respond to any of your emails or calls?
No, I mean, if I say, like, if I'm reporting something and I email PR for comment, they'll eventually get back to me. They're not totally blowing up, but I mean, I think for both John and I, where this is the same for ESPN, you know, when we feel sort of we should be going to ESPN PR, we do, and then many other times we will go directly to the person we're going to.
But I ask because you have this contentious relationship with some of the FS1 staff.
I have a contentious relationship with some of the on-air talent as well as me. Like, you know, actually, Jamie Hartson, I get along fine. I just think a lot of the shows he does are shit.
But they actually love it.
Yeah, I will give Jamie a lot of credit in that he is much like someone who would enjoy the WWE, WWF aspect of it. He likes the
– right.
Where ESPN is like, you know – I mean, listen, these were the guys who wrote a cease and desist letter to Part of My Take because it was too close to PTI. Right. It's just a different organization.
But I don't – I mean – but I think Jamie Horowitz has to be that way because he has staff who's clearly just saying stuff that they don't even believe just to get attention, whereas I don't think ESPN does that. I mean, maybe a little bit.
Well, they're the underdog, right? So they got to try to get attention wherever they can get it.
Right. So it's say the stupidest, most outrageous thing you could get in hopes that schmucks like me and other blogs write about it. And, you know, that's how we'll try to get our attention.
Yeah, I there's no doubt. I mean, again, I don't want to sort of relitigate this, but I do think there is I do think maybe the 15 hours of debate sort of thesis has reached its apex.
But it's not even real debate at this. Like, they're not even debating real. Like,
right. It's just sort of throw topics against the wall.
Right. Like, people shouldn't care that LeBron got his house vandalized with a racial slur because he has money. Like, that's not even a real debate, and they're doing – that's what – so it's –
As we talked about in the newsroom before we came on, anytime you that network, even though it has some LeBron supporters, essentially has made a lot of its bones, you would agree, by attacking LeBron.
You know, that would be a good topic for us to discuss if I can take control of the podcast here. What do you think about the FS1 on FS1 crime that happens on Twitter? It happened twice, right? It was Nick Wright against
Clay
Trout.
Yeah, we talked about this in that. Do you think it's do you think, Jimmy, this is a work, or do you think it was real? Because I think a lot of it is real, but then sometimes I think some of it maybe is
work. I think it starts as a shoot and goes into a work.
Hmm. John, are you familiar with wrestling at all? You don't really know these terms, right?
No, yeah, I'm kind of lost. But it seems to me that it's real, but it's pushed and it's okayed.
Right.
It's not,
yeah, that's kind of what Jimmy's
work.
Saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Shoot work.
You got the wrestling. We use the wrestling terminology, but you summed it up with regular words for regular people.
Right. Jimmy, is there – all right.
Don't you think, though –
we're closing on 50 minutes in what I think is the worst roundtable of all time.
Don't you think, though, when Nick Wright starts hammering his colleagues and then people on Twitter are reacting to it. Like Jamie Horwitz is in his office, you know, basically having an orgasm.
Well, here's the one thing I – his first use of the word orgasm on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast. I believe we've had Climax, though.
Climax,
well, here's the one thing I would say, though, is I know that that's a good question, Jimmy, because I think Jamie probably I don't know if he likes the topic in terms of the LeBron questioning about whether he's being honest about what a hate crime in his house, which, I mean, it makes absolutely no sense that the guy would – sort of make that up during the middle of the NBA Finals. I mean,
you're also supposed to not care.
Why didn't he make it up during his first NBA Finals? But more than that, I think sometimes he likes, and John, you should weigh in on this. I think sometimes he likes the back and forth, but I can tell you this, John. They were beyond furious when Troy Aikman made his comments to me about Skip Bayless. I believe that there were some FS1 executives wanted Eric Shanks to fire Troy Aikman, which in itself is nonsense. So that's what's interesting, John, is I think maybe...
Don't you think you should give the details, though, so the people... So Skip Bayless writes a book saying that Troy Aikman is gay.
No, he didn't. He reported that Barry Switzer, the coach at the time, wondered about Aikman's sexuality. Bayless never made any claim as to whether Aikman was gay or not. But regardless of that, John,
that's what Fox is defending.
Well, here's the thing. Regardless of that, John, what's interesting to me is, and maybe this is where Jimmy is getting at, is these hot take guys and not everybody's a hot taker, but these opinionists, maybe the brass at Fox likes when they fight, where if it's a quote-unquote straight or traditional person like Aikman, they get very upset when he criticizes one of the talent, and I think maybe because
he has credibility.
Correct, because Aikman has credibility in the marketplace, where if Skip Bayless, you know, lights his junk on fire, no one's going to care either way.
It's also the way that he did it. First of all, he's not part of the hot take crew. He's part of this sort of Fox Sports, so he's outside of that you know, Jamie's domain there. But also, as I recall, he went outside of Fox to blast Fox. I mean, he used, like, some hack, right? Who was the one that wrote that up?
He went to public enemy number one.
No, but he went to Sports Illustrated to have it done. It's like, well, if you're going to rip my guys, I want you to do it
on Twitter,
within my walled garden here.
Right?
No, don't go outside to do it. That's no good.
That's all right. We're coming up near the end of this. What else do we have left?
For the record, I don't think you're a hack.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, John. John, Jimmy, did you want to talk about Britt McHenry? Jimmy, you seemed to be of interest.
I just found it highly amusing that of all the people she decided to go on Twitter and defend, it was a woman who basically I wouldn't even repeat what she said to the cops in this night fight, in that nightclub fight or whatever. And
this was the Philadelphia television person.
Yeah,
I mean, just got so drunk that, by the way, that cop. If you have not seen this on Facebook, it was a Philly. I don't even know if she was a news reporter or something, but she worked for a television network on air. She was drunk beyond belief, and this cop was incredible. He could not have been calmer in what was a horrible situation. This woman screaming nonsense at him,
I mean,
and
the guy she said was just off the charts.
I mean, just off the charts. Did she spit at the guy?
She said, "This is why everyone hates you."
Right? Did she spit at the cop or not?
I don't know, but
no. Okay, but regardless, it was horrible. The cop handled it, and I didn't even see what Britt McHenry said.
She went on Twitter and was like something about, you know, oh, everyone's piling on this girl, but, you know, I know what it's like when a moment gets caught on camera and da, 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 da. I mean, like, well, don't blame the cameras for your awful behavior.
Yeah, I mean, I have to see what she said. I mean, I can't see Britt McHenry defending that kind of behavior against the
cop. She was sympathetic. I'll at least say this. She was sympathetic.
Is it the idea that, like, it's your worst moment ever on tape, and if all of us sort of had our drunken moments on tape, we'd be screwed? There's some truth to that, although there's no defending that what that woman said to the cop. John, are you familiar with any of this, John?
Yeah, I think what Britt McHenry was saying was, like, you know, think twice before you post the worst moment of this woman's career, that she obviously, actually maybe not obviously, that she probably regrets terribly. And I think that was the message from somebody that that was a message from somebody that had been there before. I thought it was an okay message. It didn't strike me one way or another.
John, well, Britt McHenry's a Baltimore, Washington person, so this is John hometowning it, as always. John,
and plus, I know how bad tow truck drivers are.
But I'm saying
they deserve everything they get.
I guess my point is, if someone's going to make that point, it shouldn't be the woman who told basically a garage attendant that she was better than her because she's on TV.
Yeah, that's a moment I would hope Britt McHenry wants back. You're welcome to sort of read her take on Marie Claire, where she sort of wrote about that experience, although it's very hard to have sympathy.
Let me read this. This is just a post from my friends, but if you're sharing the video of the Philadelphia Reporter, take a second look at yourself. I've been in a situation where a video was put out for the sole purpose of trying to ruin my career. In my case, the tape was edited and used as extortion for money. Now, where did that come from?
If we go down this rabbit hole, well,
first of all, the whole, like, if you're sharing the video, listen, we're all animals on Twitter. We see something funny or outrageous or something we'd never seen before or something disgusting, we share it. That's just the way it works. I mean, I could go through her Twitter feed and find stuff that she shared that's probably hurtful to people. So it's just so disingenuous.
All right. We are at the 55-minute mark. John, here's the last one I want to, and we'll end with this. And it involves people actually at ESPN who were laid off in the last month. Another person, a high profile person, made that announcement in the last 2 weeks. John Clayton, although he continues to work in the Seattle area, I think for an ESPN radio station, already has a job, I believe, with a prominent website there. John, have you heard at all in terms of what the market is for those at ESPN, should they decide to get back in the marketplace if they're still under contract, or let's say if their contract runs out in the next couple of months? It strikes me that it's going to be very tough for these people to find any kind of similar job. I guess maybe except if you're at the, you know, the Ed Word or John Clayton type level where maybe you get an NFL Network job. But you know, having talked to some of these people, I have heard that it's pretty tough out there, and particularly it's very tough out there to try to find a similar salary. Have you spoken to any of the people who've been laid off, and what have you heard, if you have?
Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing is it's the salary, and also the people that were laid off were up here up in Bristol, Connecticut, and it doesn't cost as much to live in Bristol as it does in some of these media markets like New York and LA, obviously. So I think the market, actually, if you want to be on air, is not that bad, especially if you consider what Twitter's doing and Facebook is doing and Amazon is doing. I mean, there are opportunities that are out there, but you're not going to be hitting the same number of people. You're not going to be making the same amount of money, and the other big problem is there were 100 people that were laid off at the same time, all who would do generally the same thing. And so there's a glut of people in the market right now. It's not a pretty picture.
And it's such a really like a I don't know what's the sort of the phrase of it, but the choice to make between do I collect my contract without working, which is probably at a very, very high level, or do I look for a job, maybe take a job that pays less, and that ends my contract? You know, John, it's such a tough choice because you don't want to give up the amount of money that you negotiated with ESPN. At the same time, you don't want to be out of the market for 2 or 3 years. So for some of these guys who have long-term contracts, and again, we're not saying you should feel bad, worse for them than first responders or firefighters, et cetera. Obviously, this is all, you know, whatever. This is all first world, you know, white collar problems. But that's a pretty shitty choice to have to make, John, is if you have 2 years left on a big ESPN deal, you want to work, you want to go out there, and the only jobs out there are for 50% less than what your previous contract is. That's a tough choice.
Yeah, it's very tough. And in fact, I would expect a lot of them just to look for different careers and get out of broadcasting altogether.
I could see that. We do. There is somebody who is a prominent SNY anchor in our neck of the woods, Jimmy Carruth Burke, who is now in PR, who left the business and got a PR job. I could see others in the field doing that as well. All right, as we hit the hour mark, Jimmy, is there anything you want to add before I close up shop here?
I don't think so.
All right, what would you rate this podcast on a scale of Mariano Rivera to a bad closer?
let's see. It's never been Mariano Rivera. Well, I understand. For sure.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
Is this a Lee Smith podcast, or we'd have to go further down?
No, definitely not Lee Smith. Maybe a...
Joe Smith, from the Blue Jays?
I'm drawing a blank on... Maybe like a Steve Farr.
Oof. Chuck Krim? John, who's the Orioles' like third best reliever?
Darren O'Day on the DL right now, maybe.
All right, this is a Darren O'Day
John,
podcast.
What the hell happened to the Orioles this weekend?
Oh, gosh. Our starting pitching isn't good, our bats aren't hitting, and our middle relief is substandard. So it was a perfect storm for the Yankees.
That all came crumbling down pretty fast. I mean, you guys were good there for...
I will say this. You know what? Brian Cashman, who I think has always gotten a big pass in the city, has done a great job now. He really turned this team around. Young guys all over the place.
They just need one or two pitchers, starting pitchers.
They'll get it.
They'll be there.
The dream free agent class is next year, I believe, right? Isn't that Bryce Harper, Kershaw?
Manny Machado will be on the Yankees.
Is Judge going to quiet down, Jimmy?
I don't think so, because he really struggled the last like 4 to 6 weeks of last season. And I think he used that to learn, because they were just throwing him curveballs away, and now they can't throw him anything. I think what's starting to happen now, this will be more than on the field. I think now the watch is what happens off the field, because what's starting to happen now is he's getting the attention from, like yesterday, he hit that home run. TMZ did a post on it. Rolling Stone did a post on it.
Just because it was such a far shot.
Yeah,
right?
495
like
feet.
Babe Ruth.
So I'm going to be curious to see how the vultures in the New York media handle this one, if they're going to do the, you know, build them up, tear them down. But so far, he's given them nothing. But they'll find something.
All right. I mean, listen, if I wanted a baseball podcast, I'd call Jason Stark and Ken Rosenthal.
This was a media podcast. I was.
All right. The guests have been John Orand of the Sports Business Journal and Daily, the media writer there, Jimmy Traina of Sports Illustrated. I'm going to take us out here. Previous guests, look at that. Good job by me. Ken Rosenthal of Fox and MLB Network. Before that, we had a tribute to Frank DeFord with multiple SI writers, Alex Wolf, Jack McCallum, Tim Layden, Mike Farber, also Wright Thompson and Sally Jenkins. Check that out if you are a DeFord fan. All those guys talked about his influence and legacy. James Duthie of TSN, the fine host of Canada's hockey coverage for that network. Kevin Merida, the editor-in-chief of The Undefeated. Bob Lee and Jeremy Schapp. And then prior to that, it was Sports Media Roundtable 5. So this is Sports Media Roundtable 6. I did not know that until I'm seeing that. All right, let me thank everybody for this really subpar podcast. That would be Jamie Lasante, who is the tennis producer here, as well as the tech and media producer, and also does podcasts. One of the rising stars of Sports Illustrated, probably severely underpaid. Lou Pellegrino, of course, is the producer. Sports Illustrated, Chris Doan, Ryan Hunt, John Wertheim, Ben Eagle. For Jimmy Traina and John Orand, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.